Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We'd like to better understand who is listening and how you are using podcasts. Please help us out by completing a short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcastsurvey. That's one word. It takes less than 10 minutes and it really helps support the show. That's npr.org/podcastsurvey. Shazam is what young Billy Batson says to morph into a big red superhero. It's also the name of the new movie about him.
Starring Zachary Levi as the big lug in the suit, Shazam makes for a lighter DC Comics movie. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're finding our potential in this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, also a lug we love, our friend Chris Klimek. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm so happy to discuss a movie that has punctuation other than a colon in the title.
It's true. Chris winds up doing a lot of those colon movies, the sci-fi.
Colon and dash.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The exclamation point would suggest musical, but it is not.
It's true. It's not a musical, but they do hold to that exclamation point. Uh-huh. Now, Shazam is a film. If you are not familiar with this story, young Billy Batson is in foster care with a foster family, and he runs into a bad guy played by Mark Strong and also discovers that he can, when he says Shazam, exclamation point, transform himself into a great big puffy suited superhero played by Zachary Levi. You might know Zachary Levi from Chuck, where he's doing kind of a similar nerd becomes a spy. So guy uncomfortable with his role, not sure what he's doing, powers he doesn't understand. Glenn, what did you think about Shazam?
I thought the parts that were fun, where they were bringing something new and fresh, were very fun and new and fresh, but they kind of shone a harsh light onto the parts that were formulaic and superhero-y. They brought them into sharper relief because over here, you're opening up the form. You're doing something. And over here, you're just doubling down on the villain backstory, the arc of the selfish hero has to learn to accept love and family and, you know, all the parents issue stuff. So I found myself in those moments growing a little impatient, which is why, for as fun as a lot of this movie is, you feel every minute of its 2 hours and 12 minutes.
Yeah. When you say fresh and different, what are you talking about that it's introducing that's fresh?
They are making the character of Shazam, played by Zachary Levi, goofy, with a lot of goofy stunts. And so they're unpacking things like the training montage. We get that in an extended way. Now, realistically, we've seen very similar kind of things done on a show like Heroes. A lot of what this film does that's fun has been done elsewhere. It's just packaged neatly in a kind of a fun way. I think the reason that I grew a little bit impatient is that you compare this to a film like Aquaman, which is another DC Comics property that takes a fun stance. They burn through the character motivation stuff in a scene. Mm-hmm. They slap on a romance, but they don't expect you to care about it. This takes its time
with
all that character motivation stuff. There's a lot of family. You know, it's,
God forbid.
Well, it's what it does better than Green Lantern did, many things, it turns a monster that is a cloud into an actual real villain. So, you know, I liked it. I wanted to like it a little bit more, but I liked it.
Okay, how about you, Chris?
So if you are looking for a buoyant superhero movie that is neither as inspiring, nor as funny, nor as visually imaginative, nor as brief as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, here you go.
Yeah.
Shazam. It's
fine.
Hurts. It's I went into this movie with my arms very much folded because it's kind of positioned as a kid's movie. And like the last time I wanted to see a movie with a kid in it, it was E.T., I think. And I was kind of shocked to the degree to which this won me over, to the degree to which it held my attention for the exact running time of Die Hard, the exact running time of The Fugitive. You know, I generally don't think comedies should run longer than 2 hours. And this is pretty much a comedy. I think were this to be whittled down to till very recently would have been seen as its proper fighting weight, the scenes we would have lost would have been stuff that that I really appreciated, like when Billy, if I can say this, goes and tracks down his real mom, which I thought was a great scene and surprising.
Yeah, I don't think that's what you would have lost. I think we would have lost is the explanation of the bad guy, how he got to be the bad guy, why he is a bad guy, how he might become a better guy. Like, that all to me is way too long and not interesting. And that's what I would have cut. I would have done a much more efficient. Here's the bad guy. Like, that's, sure. You know me. This is how I am with Super. Right. I think of all those beginnings as the Brando section after the Richard Donner Superman.
Yeah.
The Brando section of every superhero movie is my least favorite part. And this one has a long Brando section for the fact that it doesn't have Marlon Brando right. in it.
When you take Mark Strong and you give him Blofeld's face, the Donald Pleasance, Dr. Evil Blofeld, right with the scar over his eye. You don't need to do anything else.
I agree.
Like, visually, he is imprinted. We got it.
Exactly. And I also think some of the establishment of the bad guy is where you mentioned that it's being marketed a little bit as a kid's movie. I think some of the violence that sets
yes.
him up as the bad guy is a little intense
yep.
and has some creepy images that I think could stick with kids in an uncomfortable way. Talk to me, Steven.
Yeah, I had that exact reaction to the violence in the scene that's kind of setting up that the bad guy is actually bad. And it's something they could have shorthanded so easily, especially in a movie that is being positioned, as you said, Chris, as a kid's movie. That said, I got a really big kick out of this movie.
Yeah.
I just found it fun. I think it gets a lot of, there's too much throat clearing, but once it kind of gets through the throat clearing, once it kicks into its central premise of this, it's very reminiscent of the movie Big, and at one point there's even a little tip of the
sure.
cap to mm-hmm. Big.
There sure is.
And I love Big. And, you know, this to me felt like DC's equivalent of the movie Spider-Man Homecoming, which
yeah.
I liked more mm-hmm. than I liked this. It had that same kind of knockabout, gleeful, silly quality to it that I had a lot of fun with. I thought Zachary Levi brought a certain kind of big goober energy to that performance that I found very winning. And just as long as the movie kind of leaned into the fun and the kidness of this story, I just got a kick out of it. Now, will I remember very much of this movie for more than about a week, which is kind of par for the course with a lot of your especially more minor superhero movies?
Mm-hmm.
I probably won't. But I had a lot of fun with it while it was going on once it kind of got past that kind of chewy portent.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think one of the things it reminded me of was the first Thor, because my feeling about the first Thor was when you were dealing with kind of the human world and Thor being an uncomfortable weirdo in human world and he yep. was with the earthlings that he had met and all that stuff, I thought that movie was really fun and funny, and I think began to get at what they developed much more in Chris Hemsworth in Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
But the parts of it that were kind of the more traditionally Kenneth Branagh kind of big, heavy,
big
epic,
blowhard speeches,
I thought were kind of boring. That's another one with a really overlong Brando section at the beginning. And so for me, I felt the same way when they were doing the stuff that is reminiscent of Big, or even the stuff that's reminiscent of kind of any good, funny superhero guy, you know, not able to understand his powers. I think it does that really well. I think Zachary Levi is used very, very well here and hasn't been used this well in this high profile of a project in quite a while. But I do think that when it gets bogged down in the bad guy stuff, it's a little boring and very rote. I did like the kid performances.
Yeah.
I like Asher Angel, who plays young Billy Batson. And then Jack Dylan Grazer, who plays his kind of buddy, sidekick, bestie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a similar dynamic to Tom Hanks and the red-haired kid in Big.
Sure.
And so you get that kind of...
David Caruso, the red-haired kid in Big.
He just thinks that it's fun
uh-huh.
to, you know, to have a guy who can do all kinds of weird stuff. But he also is kind of doing that... Who do you think you are now that you're a big
right.
shot? And I really liked those guys together, both when he was Zachary Levi and when he was in kid form. I thought they had very good chemistry.
One of the things in Big is that you can kind of feel Tom Hanks trying to be a little kid, that little kid, in a big body. I didn't think that Zachary Levi and Asher Angel were kind of modulating their performances
right.
or trying to jibe, because Asher Angel is playing kind of a sullen jerk for most of this film, and Zachary Levi is playing a kind of cocky jerk for most
of
this film.
Well, and a much broader.
Much broader
joke maker.
Which you can, you know, which the big red suit and the balloon muscles or whatever, you can kind of justify it. But I didn't feel it was quite as modulated there. Can I just bring some
you can.
Comic book?
Bring.
so this is a character called Shazam, historically, it's an acronym, right? It stands for, he has the wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, the power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, the speed of Mercury. So, wisdom of Solomon, this guy's a dumb lunk. He don't have the wisdom of Solomon in him in this movie. Strength of Hercules, check. Stamina of Atlas, he gets tired a lot. And by the way,
132 minutes. I mean,
sure.
Stamina.
And if you're scoring at home, we've got characters from the Bible, the Roman myths, and the Greek myths so far, so we're putting kind of the pan and pantheon here. The power of Zeus, okay, zappy electricity, which the character didn't have for most of his existence, but they bring it here because it's based on a iteration of the comics, from the comics that he has it. Courage of Achilles, nope, that's kind of the point of the film. That's the arc that the film travels. He develops that courage, also Greek, and the speed of Mercury, but now we're back to Roman myth again. So if you're sitting there with this checkbox in your head, like I have, this film doesn't quite line up. Again, that's kind of the point.
But if he came in with all the courage and intelligence,
right?
This character has been around since 1939, on and off. For most of that existence, he was called Captain Marvel. Ever since DC Comics acquired the rights to the character in 1972, they have been trying to make this character happen, like Gretchen with Fetch. And it hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened, and they keep trying, and they keep trying. And so now, one thing that's interesting is, for whatever reason, the version of the character that's in the comics right now, on the stands, written by Geoff Johns with art by Dale Eaglesham, is exactly this movie. So this never happens, right? Where somebody says, oh, I like this movie, and they go into the comic book store, they can't find it because there's some different version going on. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think it's on the fifth issue as we're talking here. So if you like this movie, go to a comic book store.
Well, if you get a chance to see Shazam! Exclamation point, come and tell us what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of This Week and Every Week, What is Making Us Happy This Week? So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Sub-Zero Refrigeration, Wolf Cooking, and Cove Dishwashing. Here's head demonstration chef Joel Chesbro on the benefits of gathering around a common table.
One of the beautiful things about being a chef is that I can use those resources to bring people together around a delicious meal. This is what food does. Allow you to have these wonderful moments of human interaction.
Cook, create, and live deliciously with Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove. Visit sub-zero-wolf.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. With a franchised network of highly trained agents and advanced marketing tools, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services network members aim to provide something more than just real estate. They think beyond the next transaction and build relationships based on your long-term goals to ensure you'll get all the value that home brings, year after year, home after home. All that more they do, that's home services. Start your home search at BerkshireHathawayHS.com.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen C. Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, this week, NPR Music got two pieces of wonderful news. One is that the last winner of the Tiny Desk Contest, Naya Izumi, has been signed to a major label deal with Sony Music Masterworks, another fabulous success story from the Tiny Desk Contest. If you or anyone you know is in a band, is interested in entering the Tiny Desk Contest, that is going on right now. There has been a tremendous string of successes with our past winners. The other piece of great news for us is that this week they announced a new Carly Rae Jepsen album, which Jessica hit us with a little sample. Don't give it up. Just a big slice of summery rosé wave pop that we are all enjoying. And I had the experience the other day of walking out in front of the NPR building, turning around, looking at the NPR scrolling marquee, and seeing the words, "We are truly blessed." Dedicated comes out May 17th. Because the NPR music team is very, very, very excited about Carly Rae Jepsen in general and this album in particular. As the teaser said that we saw in the marquee, Carly Rae Jepsen's new album, Dedicated, comes out May 17th, and I can't wait.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson.
You know, the yesterday on my Twitter timeline, tickets for the Carly Rae Jepsen tour and Avengers Endgame went on sale at exactly the same moment. And the timeline just filled up with people saying, I got tickets. And it's like, oh, hi, here are my people.
Here's
what's going on here.
All right. Well, Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
The second season of Star Trek Discovery is on CBS All Access now, and it is far superior to the first season. If you checked out of that first season because of all the Klingon stuff, and all the Klingon stuff is boring, rule of culture, Klingons are boring. You are not wrong, and the Klingons are gone, and we're back to some trippy-ass time travel stuff that I just eat up with a spoon. Anytime anybody on one of these shows says tachyons, that means time travel, that means I'm in, even though it means that there are no stakes at all. Nothing, whatever happens is going to revert to form at the beginning. This season is made by the presence of an actor named, improbably enough, Anson Mount,
yes.
He plays Captain Christopher Pike, and he is bringing so much of this sort of wry, funny, heroic energy to the show, which is exactly what it needed. It needed more humor of this vibrating at exactly this frequency. He is great. And the last time I saw him, he was on a terrible ABC show called The Inhumans, where he played Black Bolt, who is a character who can't talk. So he spent the entire run of that terrible, terrible show just arching his eyebrows at people. And here he is just getting a lot to play with, and he's so fun. So Anson Mount on Star Trek Discovery.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Chris Klimek, what is making you happy this week?
Okay, so many things. New Jenny Lewis album, great. New season of Santa Clarita Diet, great.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been revisiting the just released on Blu-ray series The Shield, Sean Ryan's Dirty Cop, and some Honest Cop epic that started around 2002, wrapped up about a decade ago. When this show first appeared, just the way it was promoted made me think it was bro-y. It was Kid Rock high-fiving Vin Diesel over a Mountain Dew Red Bull kind of slurry.
I get that.
And just not for me, as much as I love cop shows. But, you know, it turns out, like, I grew up on these kind of, you know, rogue cop movies, rogue cop shows that were never critical of that as a law enforcement method. And the passage of another decade, the occurrence of Black Lives Matter, this rash of well-publicized shootings of unarmed suspects, all this stuff has only made this show seem, you know, more timely, more incendiary. Like, I'm not sure they could even really do all this stuff now. But the show is just so much smarter than the way its promotion made it look. I have gone through the first season again, that it really is this extended dialogue between different methods of policing, and no one is completely upright or honest on this show. You know, even the honest cops have either political ambitions or ego-driven ambitions. It's just so rich. It's so good. It is Sean Ryan's series, The Shield.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Chris Klimek. In 2017, in September of 2017, at the Toronto International Film Festival, I saw a film called Unicorn Store, and it was directed by and stars Brie Larson, who you might have seen recently in a superhero movie, who is also an Oscar-winning actress. It is a film about a young woman who is sort of she's an adult, but she is a devotee of the kind of unicorn rainbow glitter aesthetic. And that led a lot of critics to feel like the film was, as they put it, cringy or, you know, embarrassing. But it is about her immersion in that aesthetic. And then it becomes kind of magical realism, and she receives a message and goes to a place and meets a magical figure played by awesomely Samuel L. Jackson in a series of fantastic outfits. This is going to be a little bit of a polarizing film, because for some people, this is going to play right into their heart that I was that person. It also is a wonderful romantic comedy story. For other people, it feels a little too corny and weird. I'm not sure it's a Glenn Weldon special, but I was very disappointed that it did not get distribution coming out of Toronto. However, as you hear this show on Friday, it is on Netflix. It is available to stream, and I am so thrilled, because it is not often that something that I loved in Toronto that didn't make it to distribution suddenly becomes widely available to people, and I'm so excited. Find it on Netflix. You can also read my review of it on NPR.org. Unicorn Store, starring and directed by Brie Larson. And that is what is making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can find Glenn at GH Weldon and Chris at CT Klimek. You can find our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. And once again, please help us out by completing our short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcast survey. It takes less than 10 minutes and it will really help support the show. So we will see you all right back here next week.
Auditioning for the Netflix reboot of Queer Eye was kind of like trying out for a boy band.
Oh, it was an audition for a boy band. Like, they brought 200 gays in a room and were like, fight!
Karamo Brown on the Fab Five. This week on It's Been a Minute from NPR.